everyone. It's been said that every quilt tells a story, and it's so true. But I also believe every quilter has a story to tell. I wanted to hear about the people behind these wonderful quilts and thought you'd enjoy hearing about their lives also. Welcome to A Quilter's Life. I'm so thankful that my neighbor and friend, Diane Tootin, let me know about her niece, Rebecca Herndon. Rebecca and I had such an enjoyable visit. You can see her quilts and rugs on her Crashing Pines Quilts Facebook page.
Thank you, Rebecca, for being on A Quilter's Life. This is great.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
So let's start with your background. Where were you born and raised?
Charleston, South Carolina. There were three of us back then, three kids. I'm the middle. I have an older brother and a younger sister who has now passed on. And we moved up here to Yankee Country when I was in fourth grade. And after that, we moved around quite a bit. My mom went to medical school when I was a senior in high school, so I wound up graduating at Greenbrier East in Lewisburg, West Virginia, where I knew not a single soul.
Wow.
Which is fine with me. You know, I'm just putting in my time to get my diploma. And by then, we had the addition of my younger brother, who was three at the time. So I stayed home and kind of raised him and confused him completely because he thought he had three moms.
Oh, no.
I think he's got that straightened out now. I wouldn't count on it. And I was home with him all day. My sister was still in school. My older brother, you know, they're not good with little kids. He would just, you know how three-year-olds are, the questions, always the questions. You know, he had to keep me minutely informed, you know, whatever he's doing. I just ate a gnat, for instance. Okay, don't let it spoil your lunch. Lunch is in a few minutes. He was just uber obnoxious once. He used to call me Becky, and I said, Becky's not here anymore. And he said, well, then who are you? And I pulled a name out of the air and said, my name's Ruby Jane. I just look a lot like Becky. And he said, oh, okay, well, Ruby Jane then. It did not faze him in the least. Okay, you're the stand-in, whatever, I don't care. So that became one of my nicknames, was Ruby Jane. Pretty much how I grew up. Lived all over the Northeast. My dad was a journeyman wireman, so he would travel out to big jobs, maybe stay a week. Maybe the job would be finished, and he'd come home and say, got a new job lined up. It'd be a Friday, and the new job starts on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd pack up the whole house, and I'd be in a new school by Tuesday.
Wow.
But it made me adaptable. My younger sister, not so much, but I became very adaptable. And you know that social facade that you learn to put up as a defense? So people think I'm sociable, and actually I'm really a hermit, so it must be still working. So anyway, I graduated high school in 1975, and I got married, had my first child, Richard, the musician, and he was born in 1980, and by 81, we were living in Worcester, Ohio, and I would come down to my grandma's. She lived in Stockport, which is near Marietta, and you've had kids, especially when you're that young. It's babies raising babies, and I would feel like I was so isolated. So I would pack up Richard, and we'd go spend maybe a week at my grandma's, and that's where I learned the idea of quilting. I think it was 82 when the rotary cutter came out. This is what a fossil I am. I was there when the rotary cutter was invented. And back then, the rulers, you had these plexiglass rulers with no markings on them. You know, so you had these like three or four sizes that you could cut. And that was it. Olfa came out with the mat the same time they came out with the cutter. And I took a class with a friend of mine whose daughter boarded her horse at the same place my horse was. So Sylvia and I took this class where you learn to use a rotary cutter without losing a finger, hopefully. And I think the pattern was a sunshine and shadow. I think it was all, you'd have a solid triangle and then a trip-piece triangle. And I made mine. I was quite happy with it. I used six different colors of the same pin dot because we didn't have a lot of fabric options in 81. And then I used a real, real dark, I think it may have even been a black print for the solid, and tied it because I didn't think quilting sounded like that much fun. And I gave it to my older son, and he wore it out. It lasted clear through his college years, and it died shortly after that. He literally wore it out. But I don't think the tied quilts last as long as a quilted quilt. But that's just me.
Did you have other jobs besides working on your quilts?
No. I'm like Bruce Springsteen. I've never had a bona fide job in my life. I worked briefly in a bookstore. I had three kids, and I stayed home with them. I was married to a physician, so I had the luxury of doing that.
Yeah.
Then I admire women who can keep it together enough to have an actual career and wrangle kids. It's a tough, I couldn't have done that. Didn't want to even do that. So it turned out all right. I mean, none of them are axe murderers or anything like that. So I feel like I did an okay job. I tell my German Shepherd, he's 9 years old now, and his person is my younger son, which is thoroughly obnoxious because I bought the dog. I trained the dog, kind of. But he lives and breathes for Xander.
Yeah.
And Xander will be leaving, and he's loving all over the dog. He barely says goodbye to me. But he'll look at me long enough to say, isn't he pretty? Isn't he good? And I'll say, oh, he's pretty good. gag, you know. And then I'll look at this dog sometimes, and he's a gorgeous shepherd. And I'll look at him, I'll say, yeah, you're pretty. That's good work if you can get it to be born with fabulous good looks and no personality. So you're golden on that front, hound dog. But he's a nice dog. He's right here with me. He's got a bed in every room, to the consternation of my older cousin, Susie. They were up here last summer. She hadn't been here before, and she's always been one of my favorites. This is Aunt Diane's older daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She just walks in I call it the sweatshop. It's kind of a sewing room. And she said, that dog has a bed in every room. Yeah, is that a problem? He's got one in the hall, too, if you didn't notice that. You know, German Shepherds have to be where their peeps are. That's just the way they are. And they're gloomy. If you want sunshine and rainbows, get a golden retriever. Don't get a German Shepherd. Which I like. I don't want all that happiness surrounding.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I'll take doom and gloom.
Let's talk about your horses. How did you get into horses?
I whined and cried for a whole weekend. I was a daddy's girl. And if he could give it to me, if I wanted the moon, he would try to unhang it from the sky. So I whined and carried on for a weekend when I was 8, and we lived out in the sticks, and I thought a pony was the thing that I had to have. And lo and behold, here comes this guy with two ponies in the bed of the pickup with stakes on the side, you know, back in the 60s,
uh-huh.
That's what everybody did. One for me and one for my sister, who had not whined and cried and done anything to deserve this pony. It's just, you know, a package deal. Becky gets a pony, so Melissa gets a pony, too.
Uh-huh.
So we divvied them up. I got the one that was slightly bigger. And as usual, she got the one that was better trained. And we spent that whole summer learning that you can't tie a pony to a concrete block and expect him to still be there when you come back outside. You know, we didn't know anything at all. We were really lucky that these were good ponies that weren't out to kill us every time they saw us. So that was the beginning. I got my first actual horse when I was 12 or 13. Again, something my dad found, brought home this starved skeleton of a horse, gray hide stretched over a sack of bones. She was a horrible horse. She did try to kill me every time she saw me. But the learning curve there was steep, but I pretty much lived through it. There was maybe a five-year span in the late 90s, early 2000s, where I was horseless. Most miserable time of my life, but for a lot of other reasons than there wasn't a horse, I was getting divorced.
Uh-oh.
And I'm sorry, if you get divorced, you really have to have a horse. You can't get divorced and not be involved with a horse. Of course, the horse was part of the reason I got divorced, but whatever. I moved out here and actually bought a horse from a friend of mine before I actually bought the house. Yeah, a little bit backwards.
You had to know what you needed room for.
Yeah, there's that. Off-track thoroughbreds have been what we call our heart horse, which is really juvenile, but that's just the way it is. I just love everything about a thoroughbred. I've had a lot of fun riding with a group of women. When they say horse crazy, when a girl's horse crazy, there's bona fide roots to that. As my son Richard says, you have to be crazy to be anywhere near a horse, considering how badly you've been hurt. To be around them is crazy. To get up on top of one and expect it to end well is insane. So that's his opinion of horses. And my younger son is anti-thoroughbred, but I can't blame him. We had a couple of bad experiences. Nothing ever happened to him, so I don't know what he's complaining about. But, yeah, I've always had them. I have one right now, semi-retired, foundation-bred quarter horse, and he is a yard pony, and he's a really good yard pony. He's a very good citizen. I've had him. He was given to me about 3 years ago, and he's a gem.
Nice.
Yeah, it's fun. I've earned it, I think. Don't we all say that? Isn't that how we kind of justify all of our bad habits? But I need all this fabric. I've earned it. I used up all my pinks or greens or batiks or whatever it is you just bought a whole other box of.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's justification, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? When I'm doing it, I just keep doing it, so.
Are there any other crafts or hobbies you have?
Harkening back to my late grandma, yes, I inherited not only both of her rug frames that my late grandfather made. These are standardized sizes, more or less. They're usually 3 foot by 5 foot. She had one that was 3 by 5 and one that was 3 by 3. So she could do just those two sized rugs. And I got both those frames and maybe 6 pickup truck loads full of polyester. It never dies, and it's horrible colors. The frames were up in the attic for several years. And finally, after my Aunt Diane brought me yet another truckload of polyester, kind of in self-defense, I pulled the frames out of the attic. And they weren't, you know, the bigger one had wooden dowels, but the small one had little rusty nails to run the warp on.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing that, and it's called twining a rug. They're not really woven, they're twined.
Huh.
My grandma always used strips of, like, muslin for her warp. And, of course, that's the way I did it, because that's the way my grandma did it.
Yeah.
But I found that using cotton clothesline weight cord makes a completely seamless run of warp. You don't have the knots. You don't have to tie the strips together. You don't have strips snapping in the middle of a rug, which is uber irritating.
Mm-hmm.
So I started out as an experiment to see how they would hold up. I still have 2 rugs here that my grandma made probably back in the 60s or 70s. Polyester, never going to die. You can't fill these rugs. So from there, I kind of branched out into making them out of fleece, like polar fleece, like for a bathroom. You can make a rug out of anything. I found that the uglier the fabric, the better it looks in a rug.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I currently have probably 30 rugs all over my house, which is nice because we live in the country. And I've probably given away and sold that many more just in the maybe 2 years I've been doing it. And I bought my own rug frame because I was tired of scratching myself on those rusty nails. Sorry, Grandma, but, you know, now they make one that's fully adjustable. I can make anything from a placemat size to a 3x5 foot rug with the one frame.
That's so neat.
It is neat. Yeah, I like doing those. Actually, if I have a rug started in my frame, it's addicting. You know, I find that I don't get a lot of sewing or quilting done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any of those rugs showing on your Facebook, Crashing Pines?
They are on the Crashing Pines Facebook page. Yes, they are.
Okay.
Yeah, there's several. I think I even put up the last one that I did for my daughter. I haven't talked about my daughter. Hello, daughter. Didn't forget about you, Kate. Nobody could forget about Kate. Oh, she didn't let you do that. But they just bought a new house, and she asked me to make a rug for the bathroom. She has 3 or 4 of my rugs. And Diane probably has that many. They're all over the place, which is cool.
Yeah, neat.
Yeah.
Okay, so you said your grandma introduced you to quilting?
Yes, and I introduced her to rotary cutting. Symbiotic, beautiful relationship. And I would go down there, and she taught me to hand quilt. I mean, I knew how to sew. I'd been sewing since I was a early teenager. I didn't like sewing clothes. Either you sewed the clothes or you didn't have any clothes.
So
quilting to me just looked like a lot of work. I would sit at my grandma's quilt frame. We'd watch Jeopardy and stuff in the evening. And she taught me to hand quilt. I didn't pick it up very quickly. My first quilt was at, it was called Roman Stripe. That's what it was called, that first quilt. It was a Eleanor Burns book. So she's been around for a long time, too.
Yeah.
And my second one was a small, simple bow tie. I pieced that when I was pregnant with Kate, and then my grandma and my aunt Dot finished quilting it. Just the short time I was in the hospital, they quilted the whole thing. So I kind of got off the hook on that one. And then after we moved to Wheeling in 85, I brought with me a trip around the world in, like, these primary rainbow colors that, you know, that gaudy green calico that you could buy in 85. And I had pieced it in Worcester, and I carried it with me to Wheeling, and I started quilting it, and I will never forget, little 2.5-inch blocks. I think it took me 20 minutes to quilt one little block.
Wow.
I mean, I got better at it, but it's a painful process. It's hard on your fingers, and you have to learn how to wear a thimble. It's harder than people maybe give us credit for sticking it out. I just took one out of the frame. I've got a floor frame set up in my living room, and I just took out, that thing must be 100-inch square. It's enormous. And I've never tried machine quilting and hand quilting on the same quilt. So this is an experiment. It's a pricey experiment. I did take some pictures of the hand quilting, and I'll put them up on the Crashing Pines Facebook page today. I think I'll like it, but I still have to machine quilt around the border. It's a Lone Star, and I, you know, machine quilted the Lone Star part and then hand quilted the background squares that it's set in. You know, it's a wedding, so it's got, you know, frou-frou stuff all over it, hearts and flowers and little birdies holding ribbons. Butterflies and rainbows. No, it doesn't have any rainbows, but it's rainbow colored.
And I really like the eagle quilt I saw. find the site.
I hung that up in Richard's room upstairs. I liked that. I was kind of surprised that I didn't get a whole lot of feedback back on it.
Really?
Yeah, not sure why. You never know. Like, I put up one. I had, like, a fire sale after Christmas because my Elna died on me. I think I wore it out, blew it up. I don't know, but it died.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an old Foss 7550 from, like, 1990-something. A really old machine. And it was not happy doing free motion quilting at all, which makes me unhappy. You know how that is. Thread keeps breaking. Tension's never right. Your bobbin's all snarled up. If the machine ain't happy, nobody's happy. So I made arrangements to buy a new performance icon made by Foss. Inexpensive machines, but my dealer up in Pittsburgh had a demo. Still expensive, but half price, it's getting there. And I wanted to pay cash for it. I didn't want to have to be paying time on a sewing machine. So
right.
I did. I sold practically everything that I had made. And this one, I mean, there are so many things in this sewing room that I have no memory of piecing. But part of that, I have TBI, traumatic brain injury. Again, going back to horses. I told you, nobody comes out alive or in one piece. So I deal with that, and my kids take total advantage of it. I told you this, Mom. No, you really did not tell me anything about this. I would remember this. No, you don't remember anything, Mom. I told you this. Honestly, they do this. They're like messing with my brain, what's left of it. So this, it was a red, white, and blue big twin quilt. I thought it was the ugliest thing I'd ever made, but I got rid of it. I put it up on Facebook. I put a cheapo price tag on it, and within 5 minutes, it was sold. And that girl is thrilled with that thing. And I got so many compliments on that one, and I'm thinking, I don't even remember making it, and it's ugly. And the eagle, I thought the eagle was magnificent, and people were like, all right, I'll keep the eagle then. That's fine. There's no accounting for taste, right?
I was impressed.
Thank you. I just bought that ruler. Well, actually, I've had one of them. It's a wedge ruler. I couldn't find the directions for the one that I had. I think I had the 9 degree. So I'm, like, making things up. I would find a pattern on Etsy or whatever, or just see something somebody had done. Okay, they want the 10-degree wedge, and I've got the 9, so that means I maybe have to cut out more pieces to make the 360. So, again, going back to having brain damage, do I have to really write this down to figure it out? Yes, I really do. So it was like that for a while, and then I broke down and bought the 10 just because the math is easier. So
yeah,
you do the spicy spiral table runner that uses the wedge, and it looks complicated, but it's really, really simple. It goes together kind of like a Lone Star. You know, you're doing a bunch of strip piecing, and then you cut the secondary cut, and then you sew it all back together. It's just like Richard, again, says, quilters don't make any sense. And I said, what do you mean? But you're benefiting from me not making any sense. And he said, but you take all that fabric and you chop it up into little pieces and then you sew it all back together again. Well, okay, if you're going to look at it that way, no, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But that's not how it's done.
It just looks a lot better in the end.
Yeah, it does. Look how much better I made it look. You know, it's not like painting. You can't mix the color that you want. You're stuck with whatever you've got or can find. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes you just don't have the right pink. So you get on Hancock's of Paducah online and you find it. And you buy a whole box of it. And it's fun when the box comes. So take that, Richard. You have too many guitars. How about that?
So do you have a favorite quilt that you've made?
I was thinking about this, and I thought about it, and it's probably the one that I've made the most, which would be the Lone Star. I've probably made over 100 Lone Stars alone.
Really?
You just don't know what it's going to do, if it's just going to lay there and be flat, or if you can get that center portion to vibrate out, you know, pulsate with the color.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to do. Let's say you're going to do a yellow middle. Then you want it to look alive, which means layering that with another shade or tone of the yellow for the secondary ring, and then you got to jump to something crazy like red or bright blue to get that yellow to vibrate in the middle. And you don't know. You've cut the whole thing out. You've started putting it together, and you don't know. Is it just, I can't tell you how many I've just given away because they just lay there. I don't just lay there. You're supposed to be vibrating. Well, it doesn't want to vibrate. I don't even want to look up there. I don't know how many projects up there probably will never be done, or I'll use them for backings on something else.
Mm-hmm.
And make just something reversible. And there's some Lone Stars up there in that batch. But, you know, somebody's going to come along and think it's beautiful. They don't care if it's just laying there. They want a nice, tired Lone Star quilt that'll just lay there. They don't want it vibrating off the bed. So I guess that would probably be my favorite pattern. The one that I can tell you I really, really hate is a double wedding ring, followed by a Dresden plate. I've never seen the appeal of a Dresden plate. Just not me.
Yeah.
And a double wedding ring, I don't know which sadist invented the double wedding ring. Talk about brain damage. If you didn't have it, that... I didn't have the patience for it. I started one. I turned it into, I just finished whatever size it was. It was like a small lap quilt instead of the king-size bed quilt that it was supposed to be. And I gave away all the pieces. Here, take this. I never want to see it again. And I quilted it, and my son gave it to one of his friends. So it's gone. I never have to see it again.
Well, you tried it.
I tried it. I didn't like it, but I can say that I tried it.
Yeah.
But a lot of people say that about Lone Stars, that they're too hard to make, their edges don't meet, you know, their corners are all fluey. I think it just takes practice. And I don't pin those intersections.
Now, on the Lone Star, is there a place on there that you're doing a Y seam?
Oh, yeah. That's when you set the Lone Star background blocks. And triangles, yes.
Yeah.
Start at the inside corner and go to the outside, and then cut that thread, go back to the other inside corner, and take it out. That way you don't have a wrinkle in your inside corner. It maybe get a little excess out on the edge, but my grandma had a saying, and I live by this. Again, I am justifying my bad behavior, but my grandma said one time, and I remember this decades later, finished is better than perfect. And it is. You know, like I said, somebody's going to see that quilt, and they don't care if the Y seams aren't perfect or the star's a little lopsided or what happened over here to your border or why is everything kind of slapped together willy-nilly. Some people don't notice that stuff, especially after it's quilted. You and I know it's there, but it's like hanging your own wallpaper. You're the only person who knows where the bad matches are.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else walks in and they know, they think it looks great.
Yeah.
Unless they're critics of it. Like, I got it. But I don't want to do it, so however you did it is fine with me, because finished is better than perfect.
Yeah.
But do you remember when Seminole piecing was a big hot thing?
Uh-uh.
I think it's kind of not really started with the Seminole Indians who were in Florida, But I think of it more of a Colombian, Chilean type piecing. It's, again, just sewing strips of fabric together and then whacking them up so that it looks like little bitty pieces all sewn together.
Yeah.
I like that kind of complex looking, but I know the trick. And, you know, I think it's because we've been doing this so long, but to look at a quilt and my eye automatically goes to how was that made?
Uh-huh.
How many blocks did it take to get that design? Where are the blocks? And lately, with people designing on their computers, which I've never done, and you can almost look at it and tell, she designed that on a computer. That did not come out of any kind of normal human brain. A computer did that.
Uh-huh.
And you can kind of tell. I can. I don't keep quilting magazines. I go through them after a couple of years and tear out the patterns I want. I could not possibly keep 40 years worth of quilting magazines.
No. That would take up a room itself.
Yeah, it would. It would. And I, you know, paper doesn't last like fabric does.
No. What's your favorite quilting tool?
Oh, gosh. Besides fabric?
Yeah, well.
Can't make them without fabric.
That's true.
Yeah. You know, well, we all have a weakness for fabric, or we wouldn't be making quilts in self-defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate a really good pair of scissors. Good scissors can make your experience so much better. If you don't have good, sharp thread cutters or a machine that cuts automatically, and I've got one decent pair of gingers that I am very careful with. So I do like a good pair of scissors. It's nice to have a big stack of brand new rotary cutting blades because, boy, they don't make those like they used to. It doesn't seem like your rotary blades don't last very long, or is that just me?
I
cut everything out with a rotary cutter. My rug strips are cut out with a rotary cutter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't make very many quilts that, well, applique, obviously, but I guess I just like cutting things up. That's the way it sounds, doesn't it? Maybe I was an axe murderer in a previous life or something. There's some kind of strange connection there, I'm sure.
I'd rather you cut on fabric.
I would, too. It's a lot safer.
Yeah.
And stay out of prison. That's good.
So what was your worst quilting experience?
Oh, I can't narrow that down to one, Paula. It's 40 years. You can't just have one. Maybe I'm just a quitter, but if something is not going well, I'll either put it aside. I had a whole box of UFOs,
mm-hmm.
and some of those pieces had been in that box for decades. And in November, a good friend of mine, another person I ride with, her church group was making lap quilts for nursing homes. And we made a dozen. Now, granted, she didn't make that many. She helped with two of them. And I told Jennifer, I'll get a lot more done at home instead of hauling machines to your workshops. Just tell them I'll make them, I'll finish them, they'll be ready to go. And I made 12. Including the two that she helped with. And I pulled out that box of UFOs. And again, there were things in there that I didn't remember putting together. But
mm-hmm.
a couple of them I did. And the piecing on them was so sloppy. There was this one particular one. It was like an Escher, pink cats, black cats.
Hmm.
And I don't even have the pattern anymore. But when I pulled it out, it was in strips. And apparently, when I was fooling around with it back in the 90s, my skills weren't what, you know, I didn't have the tools in the toolbox, so to speak, to figure out why it wasn't going together. And when I pulled it out last year, it was so obvious why it wasn't going together. And do you know, all those decades later, I still had that black fabric in my black stash so I could finish that stupid thing.
That's neat.
What is that? Almost 40 years go by, 30 years anyway, and that fabric is still here. As long as you protect it from light, it's not going anywhere. So I finished it and sold it as a baby quilt, I think. I don't remember what happened to it. But, yeah, you know, if something's not going well, I don't try to fix it. Mm-hmm. I'll try a little bit if it's something I've put a lot of time in.
Yeah.
But I've got one in this bag over here. It's a Derek Lockwood pattern. It's kind of a Lone Star, but the pieces are broken, like they're set with black strips. The background is black. He says use a scant quarter inch seam. Not okay, that's fine. Scant quarter inch, ha! Huh. I don't have to do that. I'll just make it my usual, because I had a knife edge foot on my Elna at the time. And it turns out it's like a perfect quarter inch, and he's serious. He means a scant quarter inch, like that two threads on every seam made a difference, because this thing had the tiniest little strips. It was kind of a Bargello look. And my pieces, all these eight giant petals that I had pieced for hours and hours and hours and hours was maybe a half inch shy of putting
on
the pattern piece, but then you cut out these star points. Oh, I can't believe it. So eventually I will pull that back out of the bag where I stuffed it and add, I'll just slap black strips around the outer perimeter and go ahead and cut out the star points and carry on like nothing ever happened.
Yeah. And it will be beautiful.
It'll be fine. Who's going to notice? It's got these little tiny half-inch strips anyway.
Uh-huh.
But if you know anybody who's going to make that pattern, I think it's called Midnight Stars, and he spells midnight, N-I-T-E, which always irritates me, because I is an English major, and I hate it when people do that kind of thing. But, yeah, he did that. And he means it, a scant quarter inch. Yeah, whatever that means, right? What are you talking here, you know, between an eighth and, what do you want, 3/8? My machine can't do that. Sorry, bud. So, yeah, that was a bad experience. Days and days, that's all I did was sew all these little minute strips together, and it was a lot of batik, and I hate wasting fabric, so at some point something will happen. I very seldom actually throw anything away.
Yeah.
I hardly ever mess it up so badly that I just want to throw it away. So I'd say that Derek Lockwood pattern is my most recent bad experience. Yeah.
Why do you make quilts and who do you make them for?
Why do I don't know why I do it. I do quilt a lot more in the winter. In the summer, we have a huge garden. I don't know. I think it's just maybe the creativity part of it. My mom and my sister were very talented artists. Like, my sister could pick up any medium, oil, watercolor, crayon, pen and ink, pencil. It didn't matter. She could pick it up. And my house is filled with the art that both of them created. And I feel like I can't really draw. So maybe it's just my way of hopefully putting something pretty out in the world that's also useful. You know, people use these. I make them to use them. I don't enter quilt shows. I don't do any. I don't like being judged. I don't want to be judged. Don't judge me.
Yeah.
What do you mean? What do you mean a binding's crooked? It's finished, isn't it? Finished is better than perfect. So that kind of precludes me from being a big quilt competitor, because my motto is finished is better than perfect.
Yeah.
And quilt shows want perfect and finished. Just too demanding. I'm not doing that. I set up the Crashing Pines Facebook page to support my yard bump. He's an inexpensive horse to keep, but it's actually no such thing as a free horse. There really isn't. You know, they all cost something. But he's cheaper than the last thoroughbred I had. You can ask my younger son about that one. I think I just make them. Well, first off, I feel like every baby should have a quilt. I don't care whose baby it is. It needs a quilt. And I like making them for kids to drag around. I've made them for birthdays, weddings, no reason at all. I don't know why I do it.
Yeah.
It's a conundrum. I'll have to think about that. Was there a part two to that question? I've heard?
Well, it said, and who do you make them for? But you answered that in that you like to make them for children.
Yeah, and then we made those nursing home quilts. I didn't even go with the church group the night they took the quilts to the nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
That part doesn't matter to me. I know they liked them. I know they enjoyed them. I don't have to be there.
Yeah.
You know, when my daughter was at Mount DeShonnell, which was a private girls' school, which is no longer in Wheeling, my late sister-in-law, I taught her to quilt when I moved to Wheeling. And we would collaborate. Her daughter went to the Mount. Mine went to the Mount. And Laura and I would collaborate on a raffle quilt for the turkey dinner. And it would bring in a good chunk of change. They had, I think twice, I went down to the Mount to teach a segment of the geometry class. It was like this is why geometry is important. If you ever want to make a quilt, this is geometry at work. Which the nun, the sister, she helped me with a lot because I don't know the first thing about geometry. And when my daughter came home and said, Sister so-and-so wants you to come in with some quilt stuff and show the girls how to make a quilt using geometry. And I just looked at her like she had seven heads all of a sudden. And she said, oh, Sister said you'd do that, but she said she'll help you with it. She'll explain it. All right, Kate. It's essentially just fractions multiplying. You know, this is why you could sew four squares together and come out with a bigger square. You know, that kind of thing. And the girls each made a block, and I sewed them all together. And then they would hang it in their classroom. We did that a couple times. That was kind of interesting.
So what tips would you give to others?
Oh, I think you have to really love the fabric that you're using. If you don't love that particular fabric, it's just not going to be something you enjoy working on. But since I'm sure you and I are both fabraholics, as we're called, but I love batik. I am a real sucker for batik fabric, but I also enjoy using reproduction fabrics.
Mm-hmm.
And it started, you know, I think the first repros they were doing were maybe from the 30s, like Great Depression type collars. And I think I get burnt out on that a little bit. That doesn't appeal to me at all anymore. I love the Civil War collars. I've got one that I just finished and another one I'm working on. But I think it's because of this house, too. This house doesn't want to be depressed. It wants to hearken back to war times. House of the Warrior. But you have to have sharp rotary cutter blades. You got to have a decent pair of scissors. It helps have a nice machine, I think.
Yes.
Oh, that month that I had to use that old Soft 7550, and I still have it. I kept it.
Mm-hmm.
Traded in the Elna, but I kept that Soft, and I still have. When I got married, my grandma bought me a Singer 99K, which is from the 1930s or the late 20s, for $20 at a yard sale. And I sewed with that for years. I still have it. I would never part with it. I thought, thinking back, gosh, I had a Bernina. I've gone through, this will be my fourth staff with the Elna in between. They don't make them like they used to. Because, I mean, that 99K, pull that thing out, and it sews a perfect straight stitch. That's all it can do, but it is a perfect straight stitch. And I could fire it up right now, plug it in, and it would sew a perfect straight stitch. But that's all it'll do. With a zipper foot, no less, because that's the only foot that it came with. You can never get a scant quarter-inch seam with a zipper foot. I'm telling you right now, it's not going to happen. And that's when I'd struggled making some quilts with the old 99K and realized that just I needed something more modern. So I bought a Bernina. That was my first fancy machine.
Uh-huh.
But they don't get any fancier than this Icon, I'm telling you. This is a one beautiful machine.
Nice.
Which sounds stupid to say, oh, I've got this beautiful sewing machine.
Oh, no, not at all. I think people are going to really understand what you're saying there.
And horse people will get the other bad hobby. So they're going to listen to this and think, oh, geez, Paula, where are you finding these people? Oh, wow.
When you have an aunt that says, you'll have to talk to my niece.
Oh, and Diane put you
yeah.
up to this. Oh,
yeah.
Wait till I talk to her. She's in trouble now.
She might not remember it. It took me a little while to get
it. Oh, she'll remember it. Believe me, she'll remember
I have a granddaughter that just went through chemo for leukemia.
Oh.
And your Aunt Diane was it. Supported our family through that. I really appreciate it.
She was a candy striper there for a while. Yeah, I mean, my Aunt Diane, she's been my role model for me, more so than my own mom, who was Aunt Diane's sister. And my mom was a career woman. She wanted a career. And Aunt Diane's like me. She's a homebody. And that's kind of who I pattern my mom behavior on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's nice to have somebody else that you can look at and say, that's how it's done. I want to do it just like she did it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I've done. I forgot to tell you, are you familiar with the QOV Quilts of Valor?
Yeah, I don't know anybody, but I've seen them on Facebook and people talk about them. So, yeah,
I did maybe a half a dozen of those. And I don't know why I got away from it. Maybe it's all that red, white, and blue. Red, white, and blue is not my favorite combination, if you couldn't tell by now. And I still have a whole shelf of red, white, and blue fabric. If you know anybody who wants to get into the QOVs, but I was kind of on my own. Again, it goes back to me being a hermit, maybe, but I did a half a dozen of them start to finish, and that's not how the program is set up. I should have pieced the top and sent it to somebody else who would then quilt it and maybe put the binding on it, maybe not, I don't know. But I didn't want to pass mine on. I wanted them finished by me, start to finish, the binding to getting that binding on. We all know how much fun that is. But
I'd actually like doing binding.
Are you kidding?
No.
Oh, that is my least favorite. I hate doing bindings. I actually have 5 or 6 quilts that are stacked up here. All they need is binding. But I hate doing it.
Huh.
I've always hated doing it. My late sister-in-law, she used to keep an eye on when I would take a quilt out of my frame, and she'd snatch it up and take it home and do the binding because she knew that it would lay around and lay around and lay around, and I would never get the binding on.
Huh.
It can take me years to finish one just by putting the binding on.
Wow.
I know, it's becoming a phobia. I must get over it. And I even know the little trick, you know, where you're not doing a mitered corner anymore. It's that fancy little fold thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no reason for me to be binding phobic. So I don't know. I don't know where that comes from. Huh. But anyway.
Well, one question I did not ask, what is your favorite color to use? We know you don't like red, white, and blue, but what, if you had a choice?
If I had a choice, I love, like, batiks set on a black on black, or even Kona black. But I did a beautiful black flannel, hand-dyed wool applique. It was a block of the month, way back in, the 90s. And I've only done one. This was the only block of the month I ever did. And, you know, you get the pieces and everything, the directions, one a month. And I waited for the whole 13 months till I had all of it. And I actually had moved here before I put it together. And I hand appliqued all that wool with a blanket stitch onto that black flannel, quilted it with pearl cotton, and then realized I can't do anything with it because I live with a long-haired white cat. Yeah. And again, hearkening back to having TBI, you think at some point that that would have kicked in. You know, black flannel, hand-dyed wool, long-haired white cat that sticks to everything. So I sold that one to my niece, and I made another one, which I'm getting ready to put in my frames today. And it's a white-on-white cotton print with the wool. I machine appliqued that wool, but I am going to hand-quilt it. Sure. I'll put a picture of that up. Because some of the blocks are quilted, I had started doing it in the floor hoop, and I'm going to move it to my frame. You know, floor hoop in this house with all the dog hair and the cat hair, I don't want the quilt dragging all over the floor around here.
Mm-mm.
Like a big dust mop. Yeah, but I forgot what the question was.
Oh, your favorite
color. My favorite color. Yeah, I think probably batiks. Any kind of batik. And now they're making black batiks. You know, brown. They're beautiful. And they're so easy to work with. So I really love batiks.
Yeah.
I guess that'd be mine. But, you know, on the other hand, I also like an all-flannel quilt. It's just depends on the application, I think.
Yeah.
I don't have one. You know how some quilters, you'll look at their work and you'll say, that's her look. You know,
yeah.
This is her. This is, you could recognize. But I don't think that mine are like that. I don't have one set look. It goes from Vive Applique project to that crazy eagle.
Because
The eagle's pretty, it's not really traditional, but the colors are kind of tame.
Yeah.
All brown and blue. Don't get much more normal than that. It is wonderful that we have so much fabric available to us now. Just if you don't have that yellow or that pink, it's out there somewhere.
Uh-huh.
It's not like it was in the 80s. So that's nice. I can't think of anything else that I thought was terribly important for me to get out.
Oh, this was fun. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
Oh, I appreciate you calling. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of A Quilter's Life. You can find more stories on aquilterslife.com or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts so each episode will be downloaded automatically. Thanks for listening.